Welcome to the Spirituality of Strength Training with your host, Anna Willard. This podcast is dedicated to bring you knowledge, wisdom, inspiration, and guidance to wherever you may be on your health journey. For those who are new to me, I am a kettlebell strength coach, a movement nerd ninja, and an empowerment coach on a mission to bring you hope through our health. The root word of health comes from wholeness. The root word of wholeness comes from holy. Despite our differences with religion and spiritual beliefs, we are all human beings with a body that is designed to reflect this holiness through our health. It wasn't until my seventh year as a health profession where I went into a deep awakening of understanding what does it mean to train my spirit and to heal my spirit through the physical. You'll hear a little bit more about my story from other health professionals, from strength coaches, psychiatrists, spiritual gurus and leaders, to other people who talk about the importance of our health as a community body and the health of our planet as well. This podcast is to allow us to step into our whole health, mentally, physically, emotionally, and spiritually. Thank you for being here. If you love what you hear, I encourage you to subscribe. If you want more inspiration and quotes from these podcasts, I encourage you to follow me on Instagram at @Anna_Willard_. I encourage you to do a little bit of a movement, either a yoga flow, go for a walk, sit in nature, as you enjoy this episode. Hey, strong ones, welcome to the show. Today we have Chrissy King on. She is a personal trainer, a fitness blogger, strength coach, and is super passionate about feminism. Chrissy, thank you so much for being on the show.
Oh my gosh, thank you so much for having me. I'm really, really excited to chat with you today.
Yeah, me too. Can you first dive in and share how you got into becoming a strength coach?
Yes, absolutely. So my journey to strength is really interesting because I did not grow up doing a lot of athletics, and I didn't ever work out or anything like that, to be honest. So in my, I think, early 20s, I joined a gym just because my sister had joined a gym. I didn't have any real intentions except for I really wanted to be skinny. Like, that was my goal. And so I hired a personal trainer because she did. And my first session was just like 30 minutes, but it was so hard. Like, and she didn't ask me to do anything like really unreasonable. I just was not used to moving my body in that way. And I remember not even wanting to do any of the things that she said, because I was like, what are we doing? She went to lift weights and all this kind of stuff. And I was like, no, I want to be skinny. Like, I don't need any muscles. Like, I had no understanding of anything.
Yeah.
And so she was like, just trust me, like, stick with me. And I was like, well, I did hire her, so okay. So anyways, I went to that first session. It was incredibly difficult for me. But I had bought like a package, so I kept going back. And what really happened is, like, a couple weeks in, I was like, oh, you know, like, things that I did the first week that were so hard started to get a little bit easier. And then over time, I really started to really realize I really loved strength training. Like, it took me a little bit to get there, but then all of a sudden I was just like, wow, this is so cool. Like, I couldn't do walking lunges before. Now I can do them with ease. And I just started seeing my body change, and more so in just like the capability of strength and what I was able to do. And I just really fell in love with strength training. Eventually, through a series of events, I started training at a small strength and conditioning gym, and that's the first time I saw people powerlifting. There were women powerlifting. I had never seen that before, didn't really even know what it was. Uh-huh. And so I eventually started powerlifting, and I remember the first time doing it thinking, like, there's no way I can do this. Like, I'm not strong. I'm not a strong person. I never have been. And then, like, I started doing it, and I loved it, and I realized, wow, like, strength is a skill just like any other skill. And I actually had like a pretty good, like, natural inclination for powerlifting, actually. Like, I picked up really quickly. And so then I eventually started competing, and went to another gym where the owner of the gym, which is still a really good friend of mine, encouraged me that I should start thinking about training possibly. And so I ended up doing that and training there at that gym for a while. And so it just is so interesting to me now when I look back on how I got into this like work, because I never imagined that I'd ever be doing this like whatsoever.
That's so cool. Now with powerlifting, how has that kind of rippled effect into your everyday life and the mental and emotional aspect of living?
Oh, absolutely. So strength training, but particularly powerlifting, was really impactful for me because the narrative that I had always growing up my entire life was that like I'm a weak person, physically mainly. And like in such, it was like a running joke in my family. And I didn't feel bad about it because I was just like, oh no, some people are strong and I'm just like weak. So that's just who I am.
Yeah.
And so once I started powerlifting, a lot of things happened for me. One, for one, it really helped me change the focus of like going to the gym with the sole purpose of wanting to shrink my body. That had always been like the only reason I went. That's why I joined. Mm-hmm. And so it helped me realize like, wow, my body is like strong and capable. I can do all these cool things and that like there's more to life than worrying about shrinking. Mm-hmm. But then also like I realized that narrative that I had all along about just being like a weak person wasn't true. And that wasn't the reality. And so it really helped me to question other things in my life. Like what other things have been telling myself I can't do, or that I'm just not the person for, and that's really not true. So I feel like the physical strength that I gained in the gym from powerlifting really resonated and transformed like every area of my life. Mm-hmm. Because I realized that I can do hard things. Like we can all do hard things. And yeah. I realized again, it really helped me change the relationship that I have with my body. And recognizing that, like, you know, happiness isn't found in like shrinking or being a smaller size. That's not where my worth and value comes from. So I really feel like powerlifting transformed like everything in my life. And I know when I say that, sometimes people might think that sounds like ridiculous, but like literally when I look at the person I am now, I don't know how I would have gotten here if I hadn't started powerlifting.
Mm-hmm. Now, yeah. How long have you been powerlifting?
Oh gosh, it's probably been like 6 years now.
Okay. Nice. Yeah. Awesome. Do you have like a specific story that your mind went back to, like, if I can powerlift, I can get through this moment or anything like that?
Yeah. I mean, I really think about that all the time. Like whenever I find myself in challenging situations or really hard situations, I always remember like, I can, like, again, I like my mantra all the time is like, I can do hard things because again, when I think about powerlifting, I never, like I couldn't do like a push-up, like a body weight push-up was out of like my frame of reference. Like I couldn't do that. And so like to fast forward a few years and like be deadlifting hundreds of pounds, like even people that know, like my family, like they, my mom in particular, she's still amazed. Like I remember she came to like one of my first meets and I deadlifted like 335 pounds at that meet, I think. And she was like in awe because like that just wasn't who I was to people in their mind. Like she doesn't do that. Like how is this possible? And so I remind myself of that all the time, especially when I feel like when I'm having like mental challenges about things or if I'm doing things that are out of my comfort zone. Mm-hmm. And I'm just like, oh, I don't want to do this. I don't know if I can do this. I always remind myself that like, sure I can because I can do hard things. I've done hard things in the gym. And this is the same thing. And it's a good reminder that like everything is a skill, right? So like getting strength was a skill for me. And so like when I'm facing something challenging in my life, like I feel uncertain about, or I'm like, why have I not mastered this yet? It's like, this is just a skill like the other skill. And it just takes time and patience and persistence and consistency. So yeah.
Can you say those last things that you just said? Time, persistence, patience. Was it just those three?
Consistency.
And consistency. Consistency. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think those are like the three things that can like overlap in any aspect or any skill in life with that I have gained as well from strength training. I don't necessarily do powerlifting, but I can relate to some of the same things that you were saying of like, if I can get through this then with this particular lift, then I can get through this part of my life. So it
absolutely
really helps with pushing forward and taking that next step forward. Now, for those who aren't watching and just listening, Chrissy is an African American. Is there anything that within the fitness industry that you really had to push through with being of color?
Yes, absolutely. So when I first got involved in like powerlifting and strength training, I started like like looking online, social media, Instagram, like following people to, or looking for people to follow. And like what I noticed right away when I like started getting immersed into like the fitness industry is like, I didn't see a lot of Black women or other women of color represented in fitness spaces. And like, I know that Black women work out cause I'm one that works out,
right.
But I just didn't see like much representation. And I also, I just didn't see a lot of diversity. And even when I started going to like in-person events, like I didn't see speakers who looked like me. I didn't see a lot of people in the audience who even looked like me. So that's one thing that I write about a lot now is creating diverse and inclusive fitness spaces, and why it's important that we have representation and why it's important. Like and one thing for me in particular is that I think like we can't ignore like issues of like racism within fitness spaces or the, even the connection between like racism and health. And like, that's mm-hmm. a major part of like wellness and overall total mm-hmm. health. And so I think it's really important to recognize the role that that plays. And that like, it's very short-sighted to be like, oh, racism is a different thing than health. Because even like there's actual studies that show like the effects of racism on people's health, like it actually has a physical impact. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I felt like a lot of those things weren't talked about and weren't discussed. And I guess I think it's probably because it can be uncomfortable conversations to be had, but I think it's really important that we have those conversations regardless. Mm-hmm. So, that's one thing that I noticed right away. And you know, like there's been lots of situations where I've been in gym spaces where I didn't feel welcomed or things that were happening in the gym space didn't feel safe. And so that's another reason I talk about a lot about those things, because if you're not being directly impacted by it, like it could be easy to not see those things happening or not recognize the importance of like making sure people feel safe and welcomed.
Mm-hmm. So I know we just literally just met. And one of the things that I used to water ski and I would go down to North Carolina and I would work in the kitchen with this African American woman called Miss B, and it made me realize at that moment of even though I was like working to ski, just the privilege there, and how they possibly couldn't even afford fitness. Where do you think our role is to change that aspect of making it fitness, not necessarily affordable, but changing the opportunity for people who may not be able to afford it?
Yeah. So I think like when we talk about like fitness or wellness in general, having the conversation about accessibility is, yeah, it's really, really important. And I think accessibility, you know, sometimes it's a financial thing. Other times it's also just like, again, making fitness and wellness like feel welcoming. And I mean, not even just welcoming, like relatable to other people. Right. Mm-hmm. Because I wrote this article one time and I used the hashtag like fitness to white, because I think that sometimes like wellness and fitness just seem really whitewashed. And so I think a lot of people, like women of color, Black women in particular, might not even be interested in like, you know, some of the programs that are out there because it doesn't feel like relatable. It doesn't feel like something that, has considered like issues of Black women or like women of color in general. And so it wouldn't be something that people would necessarily be drawn to. So I think it's like how we talk about fitness. I definitely think it's about accessibility. And I think like the face of fitness, like one of the big things is like, you know, I always talk about is fitness is not about like wearing Lulu leggings. And like, because even when we talk about that, like that's a privilege, right? Like if you can spend that much money on Lulu leggings, like that is a privilege in itself. And mm-hmm. so just recognizing that like fitness isn't about like having the right clothes. Fitness isn't about like working out in certain spaces or like looking the part and like making fitness really accessible that like, again, people can do fitness in their house. You know, mm-hmm. it doesn't have to be at a fancy gym or a fancy club or a fancy space. It doesn't have to be like $25 yoga classes. And again, you see a lot of gyms and spaces like Women's Strength Coalition. I don't know if you follow them. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So Women's Strength Coalition is a really cool organization. They're opening a gym in Brooklyn. And one of the things that's really cool about that is that it's a sliding scale fee just to make fitness accessible for everyone, you know, regardless of color, regardless of background, and recognizing that everybody deserves to be have access to spaces to work out and to feel safe in those spaces. And again, just like making sure that we're talking about fitness through a lens that's intersectional, meaning that we are considering people's gender, race, socioeconomic background, status, class, and how those things, abilities, right? Like, and how those things intersect and how that affects person's reality in the world. Another thing about fitness that I think we don't discuss or not enough is even like, you know, access in terms of physical ability, making sure that like, if you go to a gym space, like it's wheelchair accessible, like all these things that are really easy for us to forget if we're not personally having those realities in our everyday spaces. So
besides just changing like the dialogue and making it more accessible and just the vocabulary, what are some other ways that can be changed?
Yeah, so I think it's really important. You know, I say this a lot to like other fitness professionals. I think it's really, really important. Like if you're planning in-person events, that you're being really cognizant of like who is speaking at the events, like who are your headliners, who are all the people on your panels and your discussion boards. Again, like do people feel like they come into a place and see themselves represented there is really, really important. And so I always say too, like on an individual level, one thing to consider is like when we're having this conversation about privilege, which, you know, when you bring up that word, some people get really like antsy about the word privilege. And, you know, what I always like to say is like privilege is something that all of us have, no matter like what you look like, even as a Black woman, there's ways that I'm privileged. And so privilege is not something to be like ashamed or embarrassed of or to try to deny, because it's like a real thing. Like it's not fake, right? Like everybody does have privilege. It's like, what am I going to do with my privilege? And so recognizing that, like, you know, being born into this world, the society we live in, like white privilege is just a very real thing. And you didn't, people that are white didn't ask for it, but that's just the system that's set up. And so like, it's something that's there, it's something that's real. And it's like, how can I use my privilege to affect change in the world? And so one thing I talk about too, with like other fitness professionals, is, you know, if you get asked to like speak at an event, or if you get asked to participate in some collaboration project, like, you know, ask the important questions, like who else is speaking at this event? Like who else is going to be represented here? And that's a part, like an easy way to use the privilege that we all have to affect change. And so make, or, and even like, again, sometimes I know this may sound like really, I don't think it's difficult, but I do understand why people might have a hard time with it. Like sometimes like you have to pass up opportunities to give it to someone else. Like that, that's a part of this conversation about privilege and like changing systems of inequality, because it does require people to relinquish something, right? And so that might mean that you need to pass up the opportunity to say like, hey, I don't see any other Black women or any women of color or Black women on this panel. Like, I think I'm really qualified, but here are five other people that maybe you might want to reach out to, because I think they would be really great for this opportunity. And so that's how you create real change beyond just like talking about it. Because like talking about it is just like one step, but it like has to be actionable. And so that's another thing that I think is really important. And then of course, like easy ways that you can do this in everyday life is just like, you know, like sharing the work of Black women or other women of color on like your social media platforms or your Instagram or your newsletters or anything like that. Like that's an easy actionable way to also like be of service and to like use some of your privilege.
For women of what white privilege, you wrote about a blog about empowerment and similar what you brought up earlier about women like understanding the white supremacy were part of that and how to really step into empowerment and making it inclusive. You gave the example of the speaking opportunity and then giving it to other people. Within the fitness aspect, with training and everything, and like conferences with training, what areas do you think needs to be changed in that, with like certifications and people who are training trainers?
Yeah, so I think it's really important if you are training other trainers, even if you're training just clients, like I think it's really important to be aware of like all of these issues, right? Like I, and again, I talked about this a little bit earlier, like I don't think it makes sense to ignore issues of like race or issues of gender or any of those things. And I know like sometimes people say like, I don't like to get political or I don't like to like that. I don't want to be a part of my business because people want to get away from that. And like, even in those statements is like it's layered with privilege because the reality is that like, I could be like, oh, I just want to get away from race. But like, I walk around in a black body. So it's not possible to be like, oh, I'm going to get rid of that. Right.
Right.
And like, it's always with me. I don't have the opportunity to be like, I don't want to talk about that. Or I don't want to talk about like police brutality because like, it's too hard to talk about, when the reality is that like, I have to like anytime I see or get pulled over a police officer, like I have fear in my heart. Like, it's not a made up scenario. So it's not something that we can be like, oh, I just don't talk about it because it's too challenging or it's too difficult. And so even those statements are like laced in privilege. So I think it's really important for people to have uncomfortable conversations around race, around white supremacy. I think it's the responsibility of people who are in this work or in most work, honestly, to like do some work or at real work around these things, meaning like, you know, pick up some books and read so you have an understanding of history, like understand the policies and the politics of this country. And like, you know, one thing that comes up all the time, I see a lot that frustrates me, is I see people like, when something happens in America, they'll say like, this is not America. And like, the reality is that like the things that are happening now are not any different than the things that have happened in America 100 years ago or 200 years ago. Mm-hmm. And so like, this, the reality is like, I know it's painful for some people to like acknowledge, but the reality is that like, the things that are happening around race in America right now are the same things that have always been happening around race. This is not a new phenomenon. So I really challenge people to like actually, and like do some actual work around these things, and like education and understanding just like the total dynamics of like how racism and white supremacy has always been a part of this country and how it plays out in everyday life. Mm-hmm. Which again, I continue to say that I acknowledge how uncomfortable it is for people, but like, I also want people to understand like how uncomfortable it is to have to like live with those things every day. It's more uncomfortable than having to like challenge your ideas about, you know, your own ideology about your own yourself or about just like the history of this country. Cause like, I do imagine, right, that it would mess with the person's like identity a little bit, to be like, oh shit, like all these things that I thought are not really what they are. And so I'm sure it's really, really complicated and difficult, but I think it's also really important and necessary work.
Well, and exactly what you're saying about the identity, I was in grad school last year and had to drop out just because of my own health stuff. But I had a friend who was mixed, and she was sharing with me some of the things that she goes through on an everyday basis. And I was just like, are you for real? Like, this is America, like exactly what you just said of like, this is America in the 21st century. And she's like, no, Anna, like, this is America. And I was just like, oh shit. This is what we're going through. Like,
yeah.
And it took me to friend someone and stand by them, like side by side, and just sit and listen to what she had to say and what she goes through still to this day, even though her skin tone wasn't like super dark or it was fine, but it was just fascinating for me to like realize that this is still an issue. And to hear it firsthand on that, I think, again, the identity aspect was me taking a step back and really looking at what's happening and looking at it from a different lens. And I'm still learning and where to look. You mentioned about reading some books. Do you have any recommendations on what good books to read with this topic?
Yeah. So the first book I always recommend, there are so many books. And like, thank you for bringing up what you just said. And the other thing I want to just, before I go into books, the other things I want to say about what you just said is really important, is the other thing I always recommend for people is like, you know, make sure your circle aren't people who all look like you. Right. Because again, like when you get stuck in like just having people that look like you in your circle, it gets really easy to not pay attention to the things that are happening in the world, especially if they're not directly affecting you, or to not understand the difficult dynamics or why people say like, no, this is the America that's always been. Mm-hmm. And so like, I do encourage people to do that. And even if you live in a really homogenous area of the country, like that's why social media is so great, because you can follow people from all over the world that look different from you, and that can really, and there's so many people on Instagram doing great work to educate people on these things. So that's one thing. But for books, like the book that I always recommend, particularly for white people to read first, is a book called White Fragility, and it's by Robin DiAngelo, who is a white sociologist. And in the book, Why Fragility is really great because it talks about a lot of these things. Like when you, as a white person, start discovering these things, like, you know, like your inclination is to be like defensive or to be like, but that's not me. I'm not one of those. And so she goes through all these things in the book that are really, really helpful and just talking about the topic of being of fragility. So it's a really great book. I recommend for everybody, especially when you're just starting to do this work, because it really helps you set the stage for like all the next steps that come along with it.
Yeah.
So that's a great book to read. Another documentary that I always recommend, it's really accessible. It's on Netflix. It's called The 13th. It's a fantastic documentary that talks about a lot of historical things from the beginning of history and just how, you know, even though slavery has ended, it's just transformed into different ways. And so The 13th is a great documentary to watch. And again, it's like on Netflix, it's accessible, super easy read. And then another book that I would like to recommend is The New Jim Crow Laws. And again, that talks a lot about, it's a harder read, but it's an very like educational, important read. And it just talks about, yes, the history of things in this country, particularly, and through current day. So it's a really good, so those three things are like a great way to kind of start learning some of these things and understanding how they affect things.
Awesome. Thank you. Yeah. Mm-hmm. For some reason, Martin Luther King popped up into my mind as you're listing the books. And one of the books that I still am like, I have this horrible habit of reading a book and then stopping like halfway. Mm-hmm. But one of my clients gave me the book called Strength to Love. And it's a lot of Martin Luther King's speeches in written form. What has his history, or let me rephrase this, how has his impact on history still impacts you today?
Yeah. So Martin MLK Day was just like a couple weeks ago.
Right.
I have so many feelings about Martin Luther King, but also MLK Day.
Right.
So one of the things that frustrates me about MLK Day is just like the whitewashing of his legacy. And that like Martin Luther King has had, like, if you read, you know, you've read some of his speeches, he has so many like amazing things to say and so many, I mean, he didn't even sacrifice. Like, I hate when people say he sacrificed, like he was murdered for like, for his beliefs, you know, like he didn't give up his life willingly. Like he was murdered for what he was trying to do. And so like the legacy of MLK is important, but it's important that people remember him in the real light of who he was. And the truth of the matter is that like when MLK was here, he was not loved and respected by people. Like he was not liked during his time at all, which is why he was murdered, right? And so it's just always really interesting to me, because when people talk about like Colin Kaepernick, for example, and people say like had such hateful things to say about him, but those, like, they don't understand that, like, that is the same thing. That's the same way that people felt about MLK when he was here doing what he was doing, because in the moment, no, like, he wasn't a legend at his time. He was a hated man by other people, right? And so, like, it's really important for me that people, again, this comes back to, like, the education piece, is, like, study MLK for who he really was and study for what he really stood for, and, like, recognize that, like, he was murdered for his beliefs, because what he was doing was unifying people, and people didn't want real change. And so I'm constantly inspired by MLK, because I, again, like when I think about him and I think about even like activists in Ferguson that are still being murdered, right? Like this stuff is still happening all the time. It's just like, you know, when you are really serious about creating real change, like, you know, that it's a real possibility that you will give up your life to try to create justice for Black people in particular. And so I think that MLK, he did some really amazing things that created some laws that were really important. And I think that had he had the chance to be here longer, he could have done more and would have done more. And I just also think it's really important for people to, you know, read all of his speeches like you're doing the book, right? Read them all, because there's so much more to him than just like the I Have a Dream speech, right? That's just one speech. the letters from a Birmingham jail, like read that letter, right? Mm-hmm. Because it really goes into like how he was feeling, how enraged he was at the time, shortly before he was murdered, because he understood like how deeply white supremacy runs in this country, and he knew that he would lose his life for the cause that he was fighting. So, but yeah, I mean, I think too, this being Black History Month, like it's such a great opportunity for people to do like real education. And like, there's so many things, like, you know, history books in this country are so, they don't tell the real history of this country. And, yeah. and that's for like a reason, right? That they don't tell the real history of this country. But like, I just encourage people to like learn about actual history of this country, learn about actual Black history, you know, like, you know, Google the Oklahoma bombing. And I'm not talking about the Timothy McVeigh bombing. I'm talking about the original Oklahoma bombing, which was like a very prominent and prosperous, like Black owned community with our own banks, our own grocery stores, our own everything, very self-sufficient. And it was bombed by the KKK. Hmm. And so like, just, I encourage people to really like, to like, if you're listening to this, like Google that and go right. learn about that.
Yeah, because, no, I wrote that down.
Yeah, there's so much great, and I don't mean great and like it's amazing. I mean, there's so much history that just doesn't get talked about, that again, like if you start to like really learn a lot of these things, you understand like the frustrations of like Black people and brown people in this country, because again, like this is not a new America. Like this has always been the America. And so, yeah.
This could be a sticky question. Yeah. I don't know where you are, spiritually or any type of religious belief, but yeah. I grew up in a very conservative Christian home, went to a private Christian school. And a lot of times part of me is just like, why isn't this taught in any of the history books where we paid a pretty penny to go to a private school? And part of me is almost frustrated at the system now as an adult relearning history. But why, or my question is, do you think religious in the white supremacy has a lot to do with this, and why?
Yeah, I'm happy to answer this question. This is a very sticky question, and I'm sure that people will have like all kinds of feelings about what I'm going to say. But
yeah.
I also come from a very conservative Christian background. I went to a private Christian school. I was like the only Black kid in the class. And you're right, none of these things are in history books. And in the defense of like Christian schools, it's not in public school books either. It's not in any history books.
Right.
But it's really interesting even now, because when we look at like all the things that are happening with Trump, with immigration and like mistreatment of people in this country, and like it's really interesting to see like where, how Christianity is playing a role in this.
Yeah.
And so I have a really hard time with, I grew up in a very religious home. I still consider myself a very spiritual person, but I don't necessarily align with a religion anymore. And again, like Christianity is like difficult for me because I did grow up with a very strong Christian background, but also like I see the ties of Christianity and white supremacy really strong in a lot of ways. Mm-hmm. And so it's like hard for me to ignore that. And even like if we look back, like during slavery, even like the Bible is used to justify slavery, right?
Yeah.
And so I know people can say, well, like that's just bad people doing things with the Bible. But I do think that there's a lot of ties between white supremacy and Christianity, even still today, that are hard to deny, because I find it hard because I do know the Bible and I've read the Bible so much. Like it's hard for me to see anybody who could like Christianity, who could be a Christian and not be speaking out about these things, mm-hmm. or who could be a Christian and be like, no, we should definitely put up a wall to keep people out. I don't see like how those things are congruent. So mm-hmm. I definitely do see a lot, and I talk about this a lot, and like, you know, even this is even like a dicey topic to bring up with anybody, like Black, white, or whatever, because Christianity does have like a strong history in Black community as well. And so there are people who would be very upset with me saying that, but I do think there's a really strong tie between Christianity and white supremacy. And I think it's hard to ignore. And yeah, so I don't know. I don't go to a church anymore. It's not like I would never go. Like I would go like occasionally, but I don't, it's not a part of my regular practice anymore. Mm-hmm. And yeah, it's hard for me to ignore that part because I do think that it's a problem. And I think I've seen it even since like Trump has been elected. I've seen like a lot of, or, you know, people are paying attention, a lot of like Southern Baptist churches. I'm not calling out any particular churches, but just a lot of churches in general that are still like very much supporting Trump. Mm-hmm. And that just isn't aligned for me. Like, I don't understand how that could be. And I also have been like less than satisfied with like churches in general just speaking out about like issues that are really important, like immigration or like police brutality or any of those things. I don't know how I could not in good faith like be a member of a church that did not do social justice work or wasn't interested in social justice work, because if we're about like people and taking care of people, right, like I can't see how that's not a part of what you do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I can relate to the aspect of like not going to church yet, having very deep spiritual beliefs.
Mm-hmm.
But there has been like that issue of like almost this blindness within churches sometimes of like what's really going on. And it's more of just keeping the comfort versus the discomfort on some of yes. these things. And so that's, I can relate to you on the aspect of why I haven't. I'm just starting to adventure and kind of flirt with some of the churches around here
yeah.
in Seattle. But yeah, I think that's a hard issue because I think I'm convicted of like go and be the change within some of these churches. But at the same time, like, is it sacrificing so much of my own health and mental space? And where is that balance? Going back to Martin Luther King and how he was like willing and knowing what he was getting himself into. As a Black woman, how do you find your role into like standing up for equality and truth, but at the same time keeping balance and boundaries for your own health?
Yes, it's hard sometimes, right? Because that is like a very real thing. Because,
yeah.
Constantly like working for these things is like draining, like honestly. So, you know, and I've had times where I felt like really energetically drained. And when I feel that way, and like, I think I've gotten recently, I've found a better balance of just like self-care is like really, really important, and recognizing that, like, here's the thing, like, I don't actually think that it's like the job of Black women to fix white supremacy. And mm-hmm. so my thing is like, I do think I play my part in like helping educate people. I do my part in like fighting, because that's what we have to do for our own and I don't do it for other people, though. I do it because it's like self-preservation, it's my own survival.
Mm-hmm.
It's not for other people. But then also like the part about that is important to recognize that like part of self-preservation and survival is also making sure that I'm taking care of myself. And so like you can't just fight every single day, because then you will have no energy for anything else.
Mm-hmm.
And also recognizing that, like, you know, I think this is a part of my work in the world, but it's not my, I don't think for me personally, it's my work. That's like not the thing I'm here for. And so it's a balance mm-hmm. of like engaging and then taking time to like back off and like make sure I'm feeling myself, make sure that I'm doing things to replenish myself. And sometimes that's like, you know, like not being on social media as much, or like, you know, stepping away from the internet, really, because there's like a constant barrage of things on the internet.
Mm-hmm.
Being really sensitive to like who I'm following. You know, one thing that I recognize for myself over the past year is, you know, there's certain people that I don't follow on social media, or that I mute on social media, because like I am very aware of all the things that are happening in the world. So like I don't need to see images of like Black death every day, because I know that that's happening every day.
Mm-hmm.
And so like, I think it's important that people are on the internet talking about this work and talking about these things for people who like live in, you know, like their bubbles. But I personally don't need to consume like Black pain every day, because I'm very aware of what that is. And so like for me, that's just, you know, censoring my own like social media, so that like not that I'm ever in the dark about what's happening, because I'm not, but just so that, you know, I'm not overwhelmed with like grief and sadness, because there has been days where it felt that way, like just real intense sadness of all the things that are happening. because it can be really hard. So just like balancing that to make sure that I'm taking care of myself and that I'm finding joy in everything that I'm doing every day. And just, yeah, preserve self-preservation. And I mean, and I say self-preservation, not like just for me personally, but like self-preservation for Black people, for like Black liberation is mm-hmm. what is more important to me. And doing that in whichever ways are meaningful and helpful for myself and for other people around me.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Going back to the spiritual side of things, have you found with like strength training that almost being your church almost in a way?
Yeah. You know, I'm having like a difficult time. I definitely know that I need to, or I don't say that I need to, that's not the right words, but when I'm having challenging times in life, like going to the gym for me is always therapeutic. Mm-hmm. And especially like, you know, if I'm just having a particularly challenging week for any reason, like I know that going and moving my body will help me. If I don't do anything else that day, I know that like going to the gym will be helpful for me. And so I definitely find that to be true. Things that also I personally find helpful for me are meditation is really, crucial for me. And I, it just helps me all the time in so many ways. So meditation and journaling. And I really also do a lot of aromatherapy with like, I like lavender, I like rose oil. So those things are really helpful for me. And then I love reading, fiction and nonfiction. So I do that a lot when I just need to chill out or I want to replenish myself. So those are things that are really, yeah, really important to my daily self-care routine.
Awesome. Yeah. With, powerlifting, I'm assuming that you still have to kind of have a certain aspect of listening to your body. How mm-hmm. has like the spiritual side of things of really listening and tuning into your body helped you in your spiritual walk and in everyday life?
Yes. So one of the things that's really, I found a balance with powerlifting, I think probably in like the last year and a half, is that I haven't competed in a long time for one, but, I think that when I was like very in the competition mode, like I was less like in tune with my body in terms of like, what my body really wanted, more like, this is my training plan. This is what I have to do today.
Mm-hmm.
And which is fine, 'cause that's what I was at the time for competing. That's kind of like important. But now that I haven't been competing, I do see that I'm much more in line with my body. Like, what do I feel like doing at the gym today? Like what feels good for me? Like, you know, the last month, I haven't done this in a long time, but like, I actually went back to one of my first trainers, the one who actually helped me get into training. Like I started actually training with him again in person, which I haven't done in a very long time. Because that's just what I needed right now. And right. so, I think now I am so much better at listening to what my body needs, what I feel like would actually feel good and nourishing for my body, less than like, this is the thing I have to do today. And I find so much joy in that right now. And I don't know that it will always be that way, but like right now that just feels really, really good. And again, I think, you know, it took me a lot of years to get to a place where I didn't think fitness was just like, because even after like I changed my relationship with my body, I still feel very much like there was a sense of like, even attaching like my strength or my capability in powerlifting, a part of that was like still attached to like my self-worth. Like if I could lift this much weight, right. like I still felt, and like now, like I said, in the last year, I feel like zero connection to even that. And it feels so great to be like, it doesn't matter how much I lift, like that has nothing to do with my value as a person. Mm-hmm. And it just feels so much more aligned now for me. So that's been an important transition for me. And one that I really enjoyed. So.
Yeah. Yeah. I can relate to what you just said of like numbers being your identity with being a competitive water skier. Like I found like doing certain rope lengths or like completing certain things, that was like my identity. Mm-hmm. Do you have any steps or any guidelines to help other women who are wanting to seek that, what you just described of like being able to go to the gym and like really be true to your body and not have to have your identity in the numbers of like pounds you're lifting or the certain amount of reps that you're doing? Any guidelines on that?
Yeah. You know, I think it's, of course, it always takes time. Like, you know, I always give people like some things that I think are important, but also just like the number one thing I say is like be compassionate with yourself, because like changing your mindset about any of these things takes a lot of time. And I think it goes in phases. Like I know the first thing for me was like I stopped attaching my body to my self-worth. But then, like I said, then I was still attaching like other numerical metrics to like with weightlifting. So I think for one, it's really important is to like be surrounding yourself with people who align with your values personally on those type of things. I love social media because it connects people in so many amazing ways, but I also see the negative side of social media. And I think it's really, really easy to get like into the comparison trap,
right,
when you're on social media. And even like I catch myself some time and I have to be like, okay, not gonna do that. Like, you see people like, this is for me, like I see people like lifting really heavy and I'm like, oh my God, I need to be doing that again. And it's like, well, that's not what I actually want to be doing right now. So I don't need to do that right now.
Right.
So I don't know. I'm really cognizant of who you follow. And again, like I'm fine. I have zero problems unfollowing people, but I know for some people they feel like weird about unfollowing people. So it's really cool because Instagram has this feature called mute now. So you can mute people if you don't feel compelled to unfollow them. But I do think it's really important, like your surrounding, and not even just on social media, but like also the people that you're around, and like choosing relationships that make you feel really nourished and whole is like so, so important. I think, again, like one of the things I do with my clients is like really be true. Like I take them through some exercises, but really like start to question yourself honestly about like where is your self-worth currently coming from? Like, I think the first step is just being honest with yourself. And like, that can be really hard to do because like, if you're really honest with yourself and you might realize that, oh my God, my self-worth comes from my identity with my job or my body or all of these other things. But I think like being honest with yourself is like a first step. And to know like where you really are with your self-worth and not to be embarrassed about it or not to feel like, feel ashamed or bad about any of those things. Like it's just the reality of where you are right now. So be honest with yourself about that. And then again, like I think it's so important to just recognize, and again, this is something that's maybe hard to internalize, but like our self-worth is in no way tied to what we look like. It's not tied to how much money we have. It's not tied to how we do, to like what we do or what we accomplish or how many followers we have on like the internet. Like, you know, we are all inherently worthy because we are here and because we exist. And like, we are worthy just because of that. And I think you really have to internalize that because otherwise, like, it's so easy to get caught up in all these other things that don't really matter. And just again, be compassionate and patient with yourself because it takes a lot of time, you know, and start to challenge yourself when you see things like hear those voices popping up or you see yourself doing things for reasons that you know don't align with who you want to be. Like, start to challenge yourself, and that requires being uncomfortable, you know, like that requires, you know, if you see if you feel yourself like going to the gym because you're concerned about something that you just ate, like maybe you just have to force yourself not to do that day. And it can be really hard. It can be really uncomfortable, but just really start to challenge yourself. And like, for me, I counted macros religiously for years. And I had always convinced myself that it's just like how I like to maintain my weight. It wasn't an issue of control, but that was a lie. Like, it was completely an issue of control for me, of being afraid of like my body changing. And it was really obsessive. It wasn't from a healthy place at all. I called it flexible dieting, but there was nothing flexible about it. And it was not healthy. And so when I was honest with myself, I was just like, okay, I'm done. I'm not going to count macros anymore. And it was really uncomfortable for a long time because when you're used to like doing something religiously every day and now you say you're not going to do it anymore, it is really uncomfortable. But I had to sit with those feelings of discomfort. And like, that was one of the first things I did to start to change my relationship with my body. Or not the first thing, but it's one of the things I did to change my relationship with my body. So I think, again, you have to challenge yourself and you have to sit with the discomfort and know that everything is going to be okay.
Nice. Yeah. Thank you for that. I know it's not easy to like sit with those discomforts. So if anyone is listening and they're kind of ready to kind of sit in those, just know that we're here for you on those aspects. I know I can relate a lot. I feel like I went through like identity crisis almost with the fact that like, I'm not going to ski anymore and be like, who am I now?
Like, yeah.
And it's interesting to see how some other things have kind of fallen onto the plate of like my worth and self-identity of like with work, with money, followers, all that stuff. Do you think with some of those things, some of those stories of where we find our self-worth comes from like deep stories from trauma or some of the deep stories from our past?
Yeah, 100%. So like for me, I definitely have like some stories I'm still working through around money. Mm-hmm. But like it wasn't like until a couple years ago that like recognized like how deep, like where it really came from and like totally stemmed from things in my childhood and trauma that I suffered that I didn't even like consider trauma, but like in hindsight, it was definitely trauma. So mm-hmm. I do firmly believe that. And I think so many of the stories, like my issues with my body, I know for a fact came from like one of my first experiences in high school when someone commented negatively about like some weight that I gained. So I 100% think so. And I do think again, like it is really, and I want to express this again, it is really uncomfortable to sit with some of those things. It's mm-hmm. uncomfortable to revisit some of those things. Mm-hmm. It's uncomfortable like for me to like recognize some of like the trauma that I suffered when I was younger, that I always told people I didn't have trauma because like I didn't ever want to sit with the feeling of like discomfort that came with that. Mm-hmm. But it is really important. And I think that we, again, have to be willing to do that because it does help us get past some of those things when we understand like where our insecurities around this topic or whatever it is that we're working through are coming from. It is really important. But I do think for a lot of people, and I can't speak for other people, but I do think for myself anyways, mm-hmm. that there's definitely stories about things that have stemmed from childhood or from trauma that I suffered and have definitely like played into like the way that I'm like handling things as an adult. And it's really interesting too, because sometimes like a situation will trigger something for me and I'm like, why shouldn't be triggering me in this way? And again, I think it goes back to like when we don't address other trauma that we've had, like it keeps coming up for us in different ways. Even in situations which we think shouldn't like trigger something like that, it's because we haven't dealt with those things yet. So mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree.
Yeah. And the listeners know my story. So again, I just say this as an encouragement for those who are listening who may wanting or thinking they're avoiding some of these discomforts, that there's healing on the other side, and that through sitting through some of this discomfort and going back to some of the triggers of where you find your self-identity, sitting with it and moving through it mentally, emotionally, and spiritually, that's where you're going to find the healing. So I just say that just from my own personal story, and Chrissy's nodding her head yes with some of this stuff too. So just know as you're listening, the healing is through some of that really hard discomfort work. So I just say that as an encouragement to wherever you may be on that spiritual growth journey. We are getting close to wrapping it up. Chrissy, do you have anything else that you would want to say?
I just want to say thank you. I've really enjoyed our conversation today. Like, I felt like we've had such an amazing conversation and covered so much in a really meaningful way. So thank you so much for being willing to talk about a lot of these uncomfortable things and sit with that. So thank you so much.
Well, thank you. We're going to be wrapping it up, Strong Ones. Thank you so much for listening. If you enjoyed this episode, make sure you share it out with your family and friends. Give it the 5 stars and a comment below. Other than that, I'll be peacing out until next week. Hey, Strong Ones, thank you so much for tuning in. As many of you know, here in the United States, we honor African Americans during the month of February. So I decided that every guest that I have on the show for February be of color or African American. And my goal with this is to simply learn from them, simply listen from them, and to hear their stories of how they have built the resilience that many of us may not realize that they continue to strive for and live within today's society. So I thank you for joining me with this, and I hope you learned something about our culture and the culture of African American and their people and their strength. So thank you, and sit back and enjoy.